Never too young to learn, never too young to lead, never too young to build, never too young to chase a dream. You, my friend, are never too young. Welcome to the podcast Never Too Young, where student entrepreneurs talk about their experiences for aspiring ones to learn. Yajur and I are your hosts, and we welcome you to a new episode of NTYR. Today, we have Mishal Nathani with us.
Mishal is a graduate of Jindal Global Law School, and he comes from a very diverse background, since he has the experience of interning at law firms, under judges, at a startup, and even at a venture capital firm. Not only that, but he also had his own startup, Playing Crazy, which was a creative agency which engaged in content creation, marketing, and the like. Furthermore, Mishal is all set to join the Harvard Business School for an MBA this year. Welcome to the podcast, Mishal.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, and thank you for that very kind introduction. I'm really excited to be here and speak with you both. I know both of y'all are law students. I went through that entire law school journey myself and excited to delve a little bit more into it. Thank you guys for having me on the podcast.
All right, Mishal, before starting with all the serious stuff, I want to ask you, as a typical Bombay wala, how was the shift from Mumbai to Sonipat when you had to relocate for college?
As you probably expect, that's a question I get a lot. Obviously it takes a little while to adjust, and I don't think it's only from Bombay. I think that's for everyone. Sonipat's an interesting place. But you get used to it very quickly. And despite me always saying when I was there, I'm not going to miss this place too much, you end up missing it inevitably. And Ashoka, Jindal, there are a couple of other universities as well over there. They've all done a really great job of sort of beginning to convert it into a small little university town. Our campus was really big. It's close enough to Delhi. I would say that's one of the biggest advantages. So in that sense, takes a while to adjust, but once you sort of adjust, it's not half bad a place to be.
Sure, Mishal. So you had a startup in college, right? And you worked in the CEO's office at a D2C brand in India. You were an investment intern at K Capital, and you're finally going to Harvard Business School. So why law school, and how did it happen? Why did you choose Sonipat out of all places?
Yeah, so I've, like you mentioned, I've jumped from thing to thing, and people might think I'm a little, still figuring out what I want to do, or very indecisive when it comes to knowing what I want to do. But I think, for me, when I was in 11th grade, I sort of was really just enamored by the idea of doing law. And I think in my 10th grade, I'd done like this summer camp for pre-law. And then when I did my IB, I took English, economics, and history as my three higher level subjects. And that's generally just because those were the subjects that I found most interesting. And typically, people call that the law school combination. I'd also grown up in a family of lawyers. My dad, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, all lawyers. They all sort of do separate things and no one really works with each other, but all lawyers. And, I always found it interesting. And I think from the outset, right, I was pretty clear that, okay, I don't want to do litigation. I want to do, M&A law, private equity law. So, I think even people who asked me when I was 18, like that would always be my answer. But very quickly, I think I got sort of enamored by the startup life when I went into college. And not too many people know this, but like when I entered college in the first year itself, I was already beginning to work on a startup called T-Launcher, which was like this social media. Well, not even like a social media site, but it was more like a platform for aspiring artists, musicians, poets, whatever it could be, anything related to the arts, like to sort of post and build their communities and sell their work. And I worked on that for a while, and most of the stuff was ready, the website was ready, the tech was all in place, and I sort of took the call to say, okay, I don't think I'm ready right now to do this. Like, I can start it, but I don't really know for sure what I'm doing. And obviously a lot of like starting up an entrepreneurship is about learning on the job, but at that time I also wanted to focus on school and all of that, and I decided against it. And around the same time, there was this Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship, the Jindal Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship, JSIE, which was coming up on campus. And I sort of went and spoke to Jeremy, the professor who was running the center, and we started like chatting, and I started working with him very quickly. And I think, you know, that's one reason I really don't regret Sonipat or Jindal at all. It gave me an opportunity to explore a lot of different things. You know, actually, when I was entering law school, I had gone into NUJS and NLU Delhi, and I ended up choosing Jindal. And again, back then, people thought I was absolutely psycho. You know, the place I used to go for my CLAT classes, like when I decided to choose Jindal instead of the other two, I feel like they were ready to like disown me. You know, I think overall, like the opportunities you get, the sort of people I was exposed to, the fact that you're not just around law students, but you're around students from like liberal arts, you're around students from business school, you're around students from all sorts of different, like studying different things. I think that adds a lot of value as well.
Right. This is somewhat relatable, because as you started out with a platform for artists, I think we also started out with a platform for artists. It was called Cribe, and it didn't really take off. And similar story didn't work out. So here we are with the podcast. But, you know, I wanted to know more about your law school life. So in India, you know, as you would have observed, startups majorly happen, you know, conventional tech schools and B schools. People usually get interested in this field on those campuses because there is a lot of narrative around startups there. People are starting up there. And they also have a very strong, you know, alumni network, which has started up in the past. Because if you look at, you know, IITs or BITs, you know, major founders come from there only. But I'm assuming that was not the case in your university at Jindal. So how was the startup culture in your university when you were wanting to start up, and how did it affect you?
So, you know, I think you're correct. Like when I going into law school, and at that time, Jindal was a pretty small university. Everyone I was sort of trying to build, when I was trying to build out my team and get people to work with me on it, no one was really from Jindal. And I think that was one of the reasons I decided, you know, it doesn't make sense to like take this forward. Because you need like, I mean, now obviously we're all used to remote work and work from home. But at that time I was like, you know, when we're starting up and when we're like getting into it, like I need the people around me, I need my team around me. Having said that, though, I think there were a lot of things. So like I mentioned, right, with JSIE, it was coming up around the same time that I was, or around the same time that I was like deciding that I don't want to work on this. At JSIE, you know, there were a couple of other people that I met who were very interested in startups. There's also two of my seniors, actually, and I think they sort of helped me a lot as well. Arman and Ashwajit, they currently run a D2C brand called Sleepy Owl. At that time, they had also, I think before I even joined Jindal, they had also started a company called, forgetting the name, I think it was called Party Shack or something like that. You know, and like they tried, they were also like very interested in entrepreneurship, and they were a couple of years senior to me, and they sort of also gave me that opportunity to like have a lot of those conversations around entrepreneurship, learning from what they did, their mistakes. Arman and I used to write you know, articles together under the name Lawpreneur, where we would talk about law and entrepreneurship and how, you know, being a lawyer, how going through law school really prepares you for entrepreneurship. Also at Jindal, at JSIE, you know, I started along with Jeremy and a couple of other people, something called the Startup Academy, where we basically, you know, I was like, okay, before I even start up, there's so much that I need to learn. And the idea was we get professors from the business school, law school, from outside to come and just talk to us, like do like an 8-week course, like from starting up, from ideation to sort of execution. And I think that helped me a lot, you know, like it gave me an opportunity to meet a lot of other people who either had ideas, who were already working on ideas, who were like, you know, thinking about entrepreneurship. You know, I think that really helps a lot, just being surrounded, and yeah, it's small amounts and not like, you know, not 10, 15, 20% of this class. It's only maybe a couple of percent of the entire university, but just having that around you, having other people who are thinking about it, working on it, it just builds that excitement. You know, whenever you're working on something, there's a lot of excitement around it, and if you have no one to share that excitement with, or you know the lows, the highs, whatever, it can get pretty lonely as an entrepreneur. And I think that sort of community or that sense of like support around you really helps. You know, another thing that I started with one of, or a couple of my seniors later, was the legal entrepreneurship cell. you know, and that also helped me a lot because over there we were basically doing pro bono legal research work for startups, for NGOs. And if we needed, you know, lawyers around, we had a couple of practicing lawyers who were our professors. And, you know, we were attached to an incubator. We were working with the Tibetan government. You know, they have this program called TED, where we were working with, which is basically the Tibetan Entrepreneurship Development. And we were working with Tibetan refugees who were starting up companies. You know, so just sort of surrounding myself with all of this, seeing it on a day-to-day almost, you know, like what are people working on campus, off campus, like helping people. You know, slowly over time, I sort of figured, okay, and honestly, till date, I'm still interested in law. I think, you know, just realized I was more excited to actually be the one building. But yeah, I think, you know, in that sense, despite not having that huge alumni network or having a lot of student entrepreneurs, JGU sort of provided me with a lot of flexibility and a lot of like support in terms of, you know, being able to explore new avenues or being able to like find like a good group or support system.
Understood. So, Mishal, you mentioned lawpreneur in between, right? Do you think you still have the articles in the web by any chance?
No, we have them very much. I'm happy to send them across to you guys. I think it's still on my Medium page and I'm happy to send it across. But interestingly, actually, so a couple of the, I think we did 3 or 4 articles, maybe 4. And I think 2 of the articles that we did, so in my 3rd year, I was lucky enough to sort of get the opportunity to intern with K Capital, which is an early stage VC fund based out of Mumbai and Bangalore. And they're sort of sector agnostic. And I, you know, didn't really know what to expect. And I was a law student. So technically, the internship was supposed to be more from a legal perspective. But, you know, one of the investment analysts was actually on leave, and it's a really small team. And they were all really nice, and they sort of helped let me join calls. They let me like reach out to companies on my own. And I got to see, you know, both from the portfolio companies as well as what we did on the daily in terms of speaking to companies, discussing companies. I feel like that really opened my eyes a lot in terms of, okay, these are the different sectors. This is what exists in the ecosystem. This is how it gets evaluated, both from a consumer perspective as well as an investor perspective. And around that time, you know, was when I figured, okay, you know, I think I definitely want to do, I want to be part of the startup ecosystem. So, you know, around that time was when I figured, okay, I want to be part of the startup ecosystem. And that's when I started, you know, pushing a little harder. Because up until that time, all my internships had been in law. And even after that, all my internships were in law. But I think that was out of all my internships. And don't get me wrong, I enjoyed a lot of my law internships. You know, I used to wake up really excited to get into work, get into court. But I think this one was different, you know, it's just like, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to be part of this ecosystem. There's always excitement. There's always something new happening. There's always, you know, new things to be learned, new trends to be kept up with. So when Arman and I did Lawpreneur, 2 of the articles we wrote were with one of the investment members from the K team, which were basically like mistakes, legal mistakes to avoid as an entrepreneur. You know, and we sort of gave real world examples. So yeah, I'll be happy to sort of send those articles across.
I would definitely want to read them since, you know, I have this convergence between the legal field and the startup ecosystem. So after Lawpreneur, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that is when you came up with the idea of starting a legal clinic. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was sort of, there was a small overlap, but yeah, the legal entrepreneurship cell was started around that. It was in my 3rd year, which was around the same time that I had left K. I think, you know, one of my seniors actually had this idea to do something in this space. And when I was at K, I also sort of recognized that, okay, this is one thing that a lot of startups struggle with, you know, especially at the early stage. And as students, you can't really be giving legal advice, but we could do legal research work. You know, we were just sort of researching on certain topics and like providing like basic research information to startups. And I think, you know, that again, like I mentioned, helped me sort of bridge the gap between being a law student and seeing what it really took to be an entrepreneur. Obviously, nothing really prepares you to be an entrepreneur, but, you know, at least you get some sort of understanding of how the ecosystem works.
Understood. So I think opening up these cells in colleges, whether it be a legal entrepreneurship cell or whether it be an entrepreneurship cell, is very exciting, right? And we have also been thinking of, you know, opening up an entrepreneurship cell in our college. But the only problem where I think where we can possibly run into is that will we be able to find other like-minded students when we open such a cell? So how was your experience during the same? Were you able to find more like-minded people like you to take part in the same?
I think so. There were a lot, you know. By the time I graduated, we went from an 8-person team at the LEC to a 35-person team. And that was after, you know, getting hundreds of applications. I think, you know, maybe 10 years ago, entrepreneurship wasn't seen as positively, maybe even more recent than that. But in the past few years, especially, you know, and I think with the advent of like SoftBank and Tiger Global and all these guys in a much more aggressive way in India, you're seeing more and more entrepreneurs, more and more startups seeing quicker success. And while that's not necessarily the best way to think about it or the best way to approach it, it is making it a lot more enticing and a lot more exciting for people. You know, both whether it was the law school or even the business school or even the liberal arts school, you know, we had students participate in the Startup Academy and in the, you know, Center for Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And I don't see any reason why it should be different for you. You know, maybe, I mean, overall, your university might have less people. So just in that sense, there might be fewer individuals who are looking for this. But I think overall, you know, whether you end up becoming an entrepreneur or not, there's still a lot of excitement to understand, you know, how startups work, what, you know, it really takes to build a startup. And also generally, you know, like even from a legal perspective, right, there's just so much learning when you're involved with the startup. So I see no reason why, you know, you wouldn't, or anyone in their university wouldn't find, you know, a lot of like-minded people.
So, I mean, we hope that we find like-minded people. The reason we said this is because A, we have less people on campus, and B, I mean, see, entrepreneurship has taken a lot. It's like a fad nowadays, but it still, I think, somewhat remains, you know, limited to, again, B schools and tech schools, and it somewhat lags behind in the law school circuit. And we'll talk about that. We'll delve into that more deeply later. But, you know, let's start talking about your startup. You had a tech startup, Plain Crazy, and being a law student, you had a tech startup. So what's the crazy story behind its start?
So, I wouldn't necessarily classify it as a tech startup, more as a, you know, what we called it was a creative consulting agency. So, you know, actually the idea behind it, I think around my fifth year, we started it a month into my fifth year. Around my fifth year, I started thinking, okay, you know, if I'm so interested in entrepreneurship, and I don't want to do law, I want to work in the startup ecosystem, you know, I can't sort of wait till I graduate and then be like, I'm going to figure it out. You know, I was like, yeah, I have law, but what can I do in the meanwhile? And, you know, till date, but even back then, I think even more so back then, I was really enamored by the idea of starting a legal tech company. And growing up, you know, since I was maybe in the seventh grade, eighth grade, I've always been very like into coding. Always like, you know, it's been like whatever, 9th and 10th for ICSE, I'd done computer science, which is very low level Java. But I'd done some like summer camps. I used to try learning on my own. And I sort of let go of it in between. And then in law school, obviously, opportunities to code were few and far between. And I was like, you know, I want to start coding again. And obviously, you know, again, the coding I do till date is very, very basic, nothing extraordinary. And mainly from a front end web development perspective. But, you know, again, web development, according to me, just because I had some experience, was the best way to get back into it. And one of my flatmates, Sayam, who is my co-founder at Plain Crazy, he, you know, used to do a lot of freelance design work and, you know, video editing and logos and all sorts of things for people on campus, off campus. You know, and one of his clients wanted a website. And so, you know, he was like, oh, if you're looking to start coding again, why don't you help me build this website? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And so we did it together. And, you know, I think we earned maybe 5,000 rupees for the entire website. And we were like, this is amazing. Like, you know, 5,000 rupees takes you a long way in college, obviously. And we were like, why don't we do this more seriously? Like, you know, it gives me an opportunity to code, gives him an opportunity to get better, like, you know, get more practice and experience with design. And so we were like, okay, let's do it. And yeah, I think within 2 weeks, we were up and running with plaincrazystudios.com. And we used to, you know, it was interesting. It was a lot of fun. We used to sort of be in class all day. And at the same time, I was preparing for GMAT. So I'd be in class all day, come back, do my work, prepare for GMAT. And then post midnight, I'd go sit in Sayam's room, which was, when I say flatmate, literally we had like a really tiny flat, two steps across my room was his room. And, I had a roommate, he had a roommate, all four of us would usually be sitting there. We'd just be chilling, and Sayam and I would be working on whatever stuff we had. And at that time, we didn't have too many projects. We didn't have too much work. So we would just be like building stuff on my own. I remember one night we stayed up till late, just doing like, we put up on our story saying we'll do a free wallpaper for anyone who asks, just because we wanted to learn how to do it. A lot of fun in the beginning, and that's how it came about. So another thing with that was just in the beginning, it sort of started off as a hobby. But I think around Jan of the next year, we started this in September, around Jan, at that time I was just beginning work on my B school, the deferred enrollment applications. And I was interning at a IP law firm, having a lot of fun. I actually really liked that internship. And, at that point, we had someone reach out to us for social media management. Until we had no idea, both of us are not great with social media ourselves. We had no idea about the first thing about social media management. And this was this NGO. And we were like, yeah, of course we can do it. And we quoted them and they gave us the project also, And I think at that time we were like, oh shit, now what? And that's around the time though we realized that, okay, we can do this more seriously, if people that, companies or NGOs or whatever, like that actually have money are believing into law students enough to give us some work. There's no reason why we can't sort of focus, build out a team. And around that time we had, we hired someone sort of more as a freelancer, but with a view that, okay, if we do this full time, we wanted her to join our team. She ended up becoming our first partner as well. And that's how Plain Crazy came about.
So how do you scale it up from starting up with a flatmate, and how are you able to scale it up?
Plain Crazy, we've kept the team pretty lean still. I think even as of now, we're around 9 people plus interns. Obviously, I'm not as involved anymore as I was back then. But, in terms of scale, I think for a creative agency, it's very different from, say, a D2C brand or a tech startup. Especially, when you're law students, I think a lot of it comes down to people actually being like, it was a question we would get a lot, it was like, oh, why should we give 2 law students or even 2 lawyers, our like branding or our marketing or whatever. So it was a long sort of journey in that sense, right? It was like building up the team slowly, being able to constantly, do more and more work, whether we were getting paid well or not. Just so that, you can build up some sort of a portfolio and pitch well to clients. I would say with a creative agency, it's very like long. You just be patient, make sure that the quality of work doesn't drop. Don't get, keep the motivation levels high and make sure that you're having fun, right? Like I think the most fun I've had working would be in the Plain Crazy office. There would be nights where we'd be there till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. with the team. And we'd just be like having a lot of fun doing whatever, but at least we were being able to we were enjoying what we were doing. And I think that makes a big difference. There would be nights when you're interning at a law firm, you're there till 1 a.m., 2 a.m. And maybe undoubtedly there are people there who really like that. I didn't enjoy it as much. I hated staying till 2 a.m., 3 a.m. with not very interesting work. Versus, when you're doing when you're working at your own startup, when you're working at another startup, the work always stays interesting. There's always new problems to solve, new issues to firefight. So I would say, that's sort of, honestly, it's just a mixture of quality and patience.
As you mentioned it, it was difficult for you, for you to actually make people believe that they should trust you with their creative work as lawyers. So I wanted to ask you the journey of getting your initial projects and initial customers. How did you make people believe that, as lawyers, we would be able to, handle your social media, make campaigns for you and, take care of those things?
So I can't take too much credit for the creative work. I never really did too much of the creative stuff. That was a lot of it in the beginning was Sayam. And then obviously as the team grew, the rest of the team as well. In the beginning, you know, when we were in college, it was different, right? Like any money that we were making was an added bonus. So doing like we did like logos for like 2,000 rupees, 1,500 rupees, full packaging design for a brand for like 3,000-4,000 rupees. And this would be a lot of people from college itself, you know, who were like trying to start up on their own or whose families had like businesses and they wanted us to just relook at the logo, whatever. And, you know, because money wasn't that much of a concern when we were in college, we were able to do it at really competitive prices, use that to build up the portfolio. After we graduated, you know, like I mentioned, we are lucky enough to have that NGO believe in us and give us their digital marketing portfolio. We then hired, you know, we got on board our first partner in the team. She also had some experience. When we hired her, she was an education consultant, but, you know, personally, she had some experience on her own in terms of understanding social media and stuff. So that was very helpful. You know, I think for any creative agency, it was a lot about putting ourselves out there, you know, constantly putting out our work, constantly like just making sure that people are seeing us. You know, we wouldn't do this today at the same level. But at that time, it was like, you know, I used to monitor every Facebook page, you know, Networking Now, Network Capital, all these pages, anyone would say, I'm looking for logo, looking for website, like comment, like pitch, like, you know, we'd get more no's than yes. But at the end of the day, you know, if you get 10 no's and one yes, and you do 100 pitches, that's 10 projects right there. So, you know, I think it's just like, again, just staying consistent with that, making sure. And look, over time, you've done 3 projects, 4 projects, you have a very small portfolio. The moment you have like 8-10 projects, your portfolio is sort of double of that. And a big thing for creative agencies, again, is just word of mouth. You know, the one someone like recommends you to another person, they are more likely to use you than they are if you come and like cold email them or randomly pitch. So, you know, we were fortunate enough that a lot of our clients would recommend us to other people. And we got a lot of our initial projects like that. Until date, you know, I know a lot of work comes in like that. And yeah, I think, you know, fortunate enough, again, between Siam and the rest of the team to have a lot of really talented people join us. And that obviously helps a lot. You know, you're able to deliver quality, consistent work across a longer period. And yeah, really hardworking team as well. Like I was saying, you know, people would stay till midnight, you're staying till 1 a.m. And as long as you have people putting in the hours and being able to deliver the quantity, honestly, really helped us grow quicker than we would have expected.
Understood. And I'm assuming that your internship experience and everything would have helped you here, right? So tell me one thing, Vishal, that once you started out taking experience in the startup ecosystem, whether it would be interning at K or whether it be through having your own creative agency, so you must have garnered your interest in its startup ecosystem before that. But when did you decide that you will go up for an MBA? And what was the first thought which you had after narrowing down that you will go for an MBA option? So considering that your academic qualification of that of BA LLB is not the ideal one for the same.
So, you know, I think that as well, you know, I think after I worked at K and around the time I was sort of figuring out what I wanted to do, I was kind of keen to work in VC. And like you correctly pointed out, right, like even forget B school, like even to work in the whole startup ecosystem, a BA LLB is not necessarily the perfect degree to have. So I think from that perspective, you know, I actually, there was a little bit of fortune luck involved in that. I was, I randomly bumped into one of my school juniors and, you know, he had just graduated from Cambridge. And he was asking, you know, what's up and all that, and we were catching up, and I told him I'm looking at doing business school. And at that time, you know, the traditional path, and, you know, obviously there's no real traditional path, so to say, but what I had seen a couple of other lawyers do was, you know, you sort of work in corporate law 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and then you try making the switch across to business school by, you know, saying that, okay, I have a decent enough understanding. And that was my plan as well. Either that or, you know, actually at that time, that was my plan when I had met him. And he told me, you know, one of my friends from Cambridge Law just applied to business school. And there's this program called Harvard 2+2. And it's basically a deferred enrollment MBA program. Why don't you check it out? And I was like, yeah, sounds interesting. So I went back, I read up, you know, I think at that time, obviously today a lot more universities offer that program. But at that time, from the foreign universities. I think it was Harvard, Stanford, and Yale. And Yale had something similar to it called Silver Scholars. And personally, I just didn't like the way that program was structured. So I decided to apply to Harvard and Stanford. Though, you know, obviously deciding to apply doesn't really mean much, right? Like when you're going through the process, no one really thinks they're going to get in. And that's when I started playing crazy. And I was like, you know, maybe I don't need to do corporate law. I can like work in a startup, build my own startup, and then move into whatever else I want to or need to whenever the time comes. And, you know, that's how it sort of started up, the idea. And, you know, while I was in university, I was like, anyway, I'm studying, what's there to study for the GMAT as well. And so I was prepping for GMAT. I worked a bit on my apps. But yeah, at that time, the plan was to do Plain Crazy and then sort of see where it takes me.
All right. So that junior was actually godsend, huh?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to things like this, there are always a lot of small things that have to go your way. There's a lot of luck involved, whether it's with the application itself, whether it's with how you like sort of figure out about these things, whether it's, you know, just generally like going through the process. You know, I've always believed that, yeah, obviously like hard work and all of that takes you a long way, but luck plays a major role as well.
I even think that your I think even your profile was actually somewhat surprising for the Harvard admissions office also. I mean, coming from law school, I don't think a lot of people apply for deferred programs, or do they?
No, I think you're right. There are not too many, you know, at that time especially. There are, you know, obviously quite a few people applying from India, but they tend to be the from IIT or other engineering colleges. You know, the way the 2+2 or even the Stanford deferred enrollment works is you have to apply in your final year of undergrad. And it's a pretty popular program in the US, you know, so a lot of American students applying. And typically, you know, I think, yeah, there are, I've actually met a couple of other lawyers who've gotten in, no one else from India, though at least my batch. But I think, you know, what sort of helped, according to me, and again, I could be wrong, was the fact that, you know, going through law school, and you guys know this, you end up doing a lot of internships. At Jindal, it was mandatory to do an internship every summer and every winter. So by the time I graduated, I'd done, I think, 10 or 11 internships. And then, you know, when I was doing my essay, when I was called to interview, I was able to talk about, okay, why I chose to do law school, all my internship experience, my experience at JSIE, my experience with Startup Academy, LEC, all of that, and why I believe that, you know, business school was the next, or was the, you know, logical next step for me. So I think all that experience really helped, especially compared to, you know, a lot of other students who go through 3-year programs or 4-year programs and end up interning only once or twice. So, you know, in that sense, again, the law school journey sort of helped in my favor. I think, you know, again, going through law school is one thing, but I think I went through law school in a slightly different way, the same way you guys are going through it now. But different way than a lot of people approach law school. I spent a lot of my time doing like entrepreneurship related things. And it's something that I am and I was, you know, and continue to be very passionate about. So, you know, I think I'd like to believe that some of that passion sort of comes through when I'm speaking about it or when I spoke about it at the interview as well.
All right. So I think now, as I said, now we're going to talk about our favorite topic, which I think we'd probably discuss at length. What is your stance on the startup culture in the legal circuit? And what do you think, why do you think it lags behind as compared to other disciplines?
Look, honestly, I think, you know, the most obvious answer is the fact that a lot of people who decide to do law continue doing law. You know, it's like when you do engineering, when you're in a tech college, when you're at IIT, your path is not sort of defined, right? Like you can work in consulting, you can work in VC, you can work in tech, you can work, you can build your own products out. You know, I think as an engineering student, as a business student, there are many different paths you take. As a law student, typically, you know, at the end of the day, there's only one broad path, right? You become a lawyer. Like there are not too many people who are, you know, dumb enough to go through 5 years of law school and then be like, okay, this is not what I want to do. So, you know, I think in that sense, that's one of the reasons. I wouldn't necessarily like say there's anything wrong. It's just, you know, obviously a lot of people don't want to be doing startups. They want to be doing law. So you don't see as many entrepreneurs from the law background. I think another thing, and, you know, this is a pretty, you know, it's something that a lot of people ask about. It's something I really struggled with as well. But as a lawyer, you know, the skills that you learn don't necessarily prepare you to be able to build out startups, right? So as a lawyer to start a creative consulting agency, you need to have someone who's able to like do the websites. You need to have someone who's able to design. You need to have someone who can edit. If you're if you're starting a tech company, right, you need to be able to have someone who can handle it. You know, I know a lot of law students, a lot of lawyers have great ideas, but they're not able to execute because they don't have the skill set themselves to maybe develop or build out an app or build out the project that they're looking for. And it's very difficult to find the right people, right? Like a lot of the, if you talk to a lot of tech startups, a lot of the founders, the co-founders would have met each other in college, would have sort of come across each other at a hackathon. As a law student, you're not necessarily exposed to these students. And then, you know, you're using like, you're paying like high amounts to like outside agencies to build your app. You don't necessarily understand it well. You don't have anyone internally looking after it for you. So it becomes a lot harder in that sense. Obviously, you know, as more and more like no code tools become better and better, it's becoming easier for people to sort of build out projects without any coding knowledge. But still, you know, I think there's still a lot to be said about having that computer science logic, that product management sort of thought process that like it actually takes. And third, you know, it's like having that subject matter expertise, right? Like for me to be able to start a creative agency is one thing because, okay, you know, you can learn about the companies on the go and you don't need like a really in-depth understanding. Or it's okay if the in-depth understanding comes with time, but tomorrow if I wanted to start a D2C brand and say Ayurveda, as a law student, if I have no knowledge on Ayurveda, it's very difficult, you know, to start it. You'll see a lot of the startups being founded by engineering students. So people from tech backgrounds will be related to something they know about, you know. And those are the startups that end up getting funding as well, typically. You know, obviously there are many exceptions to the rule. But you know, you need some sort of subject matter expertise as well to be able to start up or to be able to like really scale up. And I think, you know, as a law student, you really only do law subjects, which isn't necessarily conducive to starting up.
You also mentioned that engineers, you know, they get to have a lot of fun. They might take admission into electrical engineering and might graduate with a job at JP Morgan or probably McKinsey. Why do you think that is not the case with law schools? Is that because they're quant heavy?
Yeah, I think again in law school, right, the sort of skill set that you go in to learn is very different from what you would apply at a VC fund or a consulting fund or at an accounting fund. You're specifically learning subjects or learning things that would help you be a better lawyer. Or help you understand, you know, certain like questions of law better, or like at least understand how to understand questions of law. You know, so that doesn't really prepare you. I mean, there are a lot of things that you learn and a lot of skills that you get out of it that help you all across the board in anything you do later on. You know, and I strongly believe that 5 years of law school prepared me to be a better entrepreneur. It prepared me to be a better member of the larger startup ecosystem as well, but it doesn't necessarily give you the skill set really required to join anything other than a law firm, like, you know, the quantifiable skill set.
What I think is that culture of entrepreneurship should anyway be promoted in the legal circuit, because irrespective of whether they want to have a startup or irrespective of they want to join the startup ecosystem, I think entrepreneurship teaches a variety of skills which one needs in life. And just in case if someone wants to pivot in life in the future course, I think learning entrepreneurship in colleges or through events or through cells, I think that's a great opportunity.
Without a doubt. And I think, you know, obviously you can't, I think when it comes to entrepreneurship as well, right, like nothing really prepares you for it unless you're actually doing it. So that's a lot tougher to sort of like, you know, pass on that skill set. I think, you know, being an entrepreneur at Plain Crazy, I learned quite a bit, but then working at, in the CEO's office at Dr. Vaidya's, which was a much bigger startup. So yeah, I think, you know, entrepreneurship is not necessarily, you know, easy to teach, and it's not an easy skill to sort of pick up, you know, in school or at university or through events. I think internships, actually doing it, you know, starting up, founding, prepares you for it a little bit. You know, at Plain Crazy, I learned a lot about entrepreneurship in terms of actually like what it takes to start the company, filing taxes, TDS, paying salaries, firing people, building the right team, pitching, business development, firefighting, and then moving on to Dr. Vaidya's, where I worked in the CEO's office, you know, much bigger startup. I learned a whole new set of skills as well. So I think the more time you sort of spend around entrepreneurs, the more time you spend actually doing, the more you sort of end up learning. And I think, again, that's the reason with law school, right? You don't really necessarily get that exposure to startups. You know, it's completely normal for someone from an engineering college or a business college to intern at a startup. For lawyers, you know, everyone's sort of looking either at litigation or they're looking at bigger law firms.
I think being a part of JGU also helped, hasn't, if you talk about you, because since we're a part of NLU, all the students which come are primarily there for the legal, there for legal knowledge, right? But when you're part of a bigger university, which has students of other disciplines, I think that also helps.
I agree. I think, you know, like I mentioned in the beginning, being a part of Jindal, being a part of a larger university definitely helps. I also think, you know, like you correctly mentioned, at Jindal now there, you know, 9 or 10 different schools. Even at that time when I was there, we had the business school. Over time, we had liberal arts. You know, by the time I left, there was also the journalism school. You know, and there are people doing all sorts of different programs. And being exposed to people from different, like, you know, subjects, different sort of schools sort of helps you a lot, right? It broadens your exposure a bit. You know, I was able to take some of my BA courses, BA elective courses from maybe like something that would be like similar to a liberal arts course or taught by a liberal arts professor. So I definitely think that helps sort of like broaden your horizons and sort of exposes you to a lot more.
Perfect. Now I think it's time for the very exciting part of the podcast, the Never Too Quick Round. Just like you guys raise funds, we raise questions, and answers for these can never be quick enough, but we can surely give it a try, right? So Mashallah, are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
Perfect. So the first thing which comes to your mind when I say the following: law schools,
cases,
HBS,
excited,
digital marketing,
Plain Crazy.
What's better, a legal internship, a VC internship, or an internship with a startup?
All are as valuable.
Very diplomatic answer, which I expected, right? But never mind. One question which every MBA candidate should know.
That's a tough one. I think not necessarily the best rapid fire answer, but one piece of advice that I got that I think has really helped me prepare is, you know, just have some larger idea of what you want to do. You know, I know it's difficult, especially today with so many different opportunities and different paths that one can take. Difficult to fixate or figure out for sure, okay, this is what I want to do all my life. But as long as you have like some idea of, okay, this is the larger area I want to operate in, or this is what I want, think I want to do, you'll be able to make the most of your MBA experience.
If given a chance to work on a startup, which sector would you prefer, D2C or legal tech?
Legal tech.
Okay. What do you think lies in your future? The corporate ladder or the entrepreneurial maze?
Entrepreneur, for sure. Not for sure, I can't say that, but I hope.
Okay, now this question. So, Mishal, we have been asking this question. I think we have asked this before also, and we are very ambitious about it, okay? Because we have not got a very good answer for that. And I'm expecting you to give a good answer because you're a lawyer. If you wake up as Elon Musk one day, what's the first thing you will tweet?
I was expecting what's the first thing you will do.
Go ahead with that.
I'd go to Mars immediately. You know, get out to one of the rockets and see everyone later.
Right. A tech product which you recently used and you found really interesting or useful.
I think my latest tech product, I'm very into tech and keep switching around, but I think my latest obsession is my Fitbit. Been monitoring everything.
All right. I thought you were going to say Clubhouse. What's the one thing which makes you go, damn, I wish I knew this before, which is also your podcast, I believe.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of things, but every time I, you know, code or every time I try learning something new in coding, you know, I think that's my reaction. It's just, it opens up so many doors for you. It opens up a whole new way of thinking.
Okay. What would you choose? A book or a documentary?
Book.
Law. Typical lawyer. Huh? What is that one thing you're looking forward to in at HBS?
Learning. I think, you know, obviously, you know, it's a lifelong sort of process, but I've never really learned anything business related. So excited to do all of that.
So, Michal, what would you go for? $1,000 a week for the rest of your life or $1 million right now?
I don't know if you guys have seen this, but this something recently has been a bit of a Twitter storm. But I would take the $1 million right now. I feel like I'd be able to do a lot more with it.
Why?
You know, I just the $1 million, I truly believe that I'd be able to make a lot more out of that by investing it or by investing it in myself, as opposed to, you know, the $1,000 a month just to sustain or just to live.
What is that one very exciting field of law which has always interested you?
I would say, again, I know I briefly touched upon this, but I would say M&A law, private equity / M&A law. I always find it interesting, even, you know, what really goes into those transactions.
Right. So, Michal, this is a question which we ask to every guest in the podcast. What changes do you suggest in the Indian colleges to foster the culture of entrepreneurship amongst students?
Look, you know, I think one thing that I genuinely believe, you know, JGU did really well is just a lot of freedom in terms of doing whatever you want and exploring things outside the classroom. So, you know, at most Indian colleges, being able to start, you know, this startup academy, being able to spend a lot of time working in an entrepreneurship center, being able to start the legal entrepreneurship cell, getting that support and, you know, help from professors, that's not necessarily very common. You know, I think that just itself fosters a lot of innovation. And forget entrepreneurship, forget startup academy, forget legal entrepreneurship cell. We had a society for everything on campus, and that's because we were allowed to start a society for anything on campus. There was a gaming society, there was an anime society, there was a comic book society. Anything you want, you're allowed to start it. And I think just giving students that freedom to innovate, giving them the chance to sort of build out something and operate it on their own, even if on a very small scale, makes a huge difference, you know, as opposed to sort of confining people within the traditional sort of route of what they're expected to do.
I think, yeah, and I think that question marks the end of our Never Too Quick round. Hope you're feeling relieved, Michal.
No, guys, thank you so much. You know, this was a lot of fun. Really an honor to be on the podcast and, you know, excited to see all the other episodes. I know you guys are doing a great job with this.
Okay, lastly, Michal, what advice would you like to give to budding entrepreneurs?
Two things, you know, I think, and this is the same advice I, you know, try to live by myself. One is keep like learning, you know, like regardless of what you're doing, just stay up to date with it. You know, things in the entrepreneurship world, tech world, change on the daily, the new products, the new services, the new competitors, new funds, new ways to do things all the time. You know, so constantly like stay on top of that. And the second is, you know, sort of don't lose motivation. It honestly gets pretty tough. It gets pretty lonely. And it takes a while to see results in most cases. I know we read a lot about, oh, this person raised so many million and this person is worth so many billion and this is a new unicorn. But, you know, they, no one reached there overnight. It takes 10, 15, 20 years to get there in most cases. And a lot of the things that you don't read about is what actually went into it, you know, like the sleepless nights, the hard work, the sacrifices. So I'd say, you know, just sort of stay on it, like don't lose motivation, don't lose hope. If it's something that you truly believe in, you know, just keep working, stay at it. And so a third piece of advice would be pick up even if you're not in the tech world, like basic knowledge of coding, you know, even if it's not like a full language, but at least understanding like the logic and understanding what it really takes to build products or apps or websites, it helps you think in a very like systematic way. And that's something that you can apply in all walks of life.
Those are three valuable advices, Vishal. And again, thank you for being a part of this. It was a wonderful episode.
Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate you guys having me on this. And excited to sort of watch all your other episodes as well.
Yep, that's our college bell. Need to head back to classes, but these stories and conversations won't stop. See you soon with the next episode of Never Too Young. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.